Welcome to the show today with a friend and colleague, Sherry Dostal-Ryba. And Sherry is just offering such a beautiful story today of unfolding and trusting our bodies, knowing that they're not lying to us, that they have this inner wisdom that we can tune into, and we can basically trust those inner signals, even if our mind, our prefrontal cortex, our language has not been fully digested and we can't bring it forth in words. I think if there's one thing I get out of our story today, it's that your body knows and you don't always need to have the words, although oftentimes that does come later. So I do want to do a little bit of a warning that Sherry will be talking about some difficult things, and that if you have children listening or if you're sensitive to particular topics around no longer being on the earth and or certain types of abuse, you may find that this episode is not for you. We're very gentle about it and it's discussed very mindfully, but just wanted you to know that in case you're not in a place where you're ready to listen to that at this time. So I'm going to begin with something that Sherry sent me after the interview. And this is an excerpt that is from a book called From Belonging, Remembering Ourselves Home by Toko Pa Turner. As we learn to follow the instincts of our inner wildness, respecting its agreements and disagreements, we are also developing our capacity for subtlety. This sensitivity is what makes us more porous and multilingual, bringing us into conversation with the many languages of the world around us. Sensitivity is the privilege and responsibility of remembering. This is the grand endeavor I like to call remembership. Most of us think belonging is a mythical place, that if we keep diligently searching for it, we might eventually find it. But what if belonging isn't a place at all, but a skill, a set of competencies that we in modern life have lost or forgotten? A living bridge. These competencies are the ways in which we can coax and weave and tend to the roots of our separation. And in doing so, restore our membership in belonging. And again, that's a book called From Belonging, Remembering Ourselves Home by Toko Pa Turner. So let's go meet Cherry and get ready for a beautiful story that she has to tell us of suffering and then coming full circle to healing and continuing to heal and then inviting others into that healing process. Okay, let's go. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. I'm Amy Wheeler, your host. Are you needing to earn some continuing education units? Well, we have the exact thing for you. Every single Monday night, we have a Monday night clinic where we practice postures, breathing, and meditation towards a very specific theme of the month. And then we stay afterwards and we talk about the theory of why we chose what we did for that particular practice. We give you a completion certificate, which you can turn into your continuing education body. And we're growing all the time. We have a wonderful community. You can do this live with us online, or you can do it through a recording. Go to www.theoptimalstate.com and check out the Monday Night Clinic, and we would love to see you there. Welcome, Sherry. So nice to have you here today in the Midwest. Is it snowing there?
We got snow yesterday. Yeah.
Okay, so did we. So, Sherry, why don't you tell our audience where you're living right now?
I am in Madison, Wisconsin, so South Central Wisconsin. And it feels good to say that after two big moves in recent years with our family, to feel like, okay, more roots, more grounding, and it does feel like we've landed in a place where we're likely to stay for a longer season of time. So that's good.
You know, I think so many of our listeners can relate to this right now, the kind of feelings of uncertainty and will I still have this job? Will I still live in this place? Will we need to move back closer to family or to a different job? And you and I have just been through this for the last 2 years where we took huge moves, two of us, two moves each. And there is this sense of, oh my gosh, I hope we can just rest for a minute now. I'm sure people can relate to that sense of not exactly feeling grounded. So, well, Sherry, you know season 8 of the Yoga Therapy Hour. I kind of took a new direction and I'm actually getting a lot of good feedback. People are loving listening to the stories of hope and healing from yoga therapy, yoga, Ayurveda, and sometimes other modalities. So, you know, we always start with like, what was going on in your life? What was causing you suffering? What happened? And then we'll get into how did yoga support you and other things? How did you get the support you needed? So, do you want to start from the beginning?
Yeah, well, the beginning for me that I want to share today is with one of those moves. So we met in Southern California. We moved our family back kind of during the pandemic in 2021. And so after years of endless SoCal summers, I was back officially wintering for the first time in 6 or 7 years. My husband and I bought our first house as well. So we were back in our roots of Wisconsin, the Midwest, in our own physical home for the first time. And it was a real time of like sorting and sifting and kind of excavating. I was doing breathwork sessions and a lot of exploration around what it meant to be becoming an author. I was in that liminal space of like, manuscript is done, edits are done, but it's not in the world yet. And I'm in that in between. So, looking at lineage, the matriarchal line in our family, being back in our roots. And so, I was tracking questions that had really started about 5 years before that when I became a mother and was kind of on the heels of like almost coming to an answer. Even had a conversation with my mom and asked her a question where she answered no. And in that time, during that conversation, my body was like ice cold and trembling. Like my body knew its own answer. And so that was winter of, 21, 22. Book came out, as well as an album of songs that I wrote and produced with a friend that May. And so it was this really ripe time bursting into spring of like, quote unquote, success. And yet a real underworld like dissolution or dismantling in some ways of like old identities and family of origin stuff that was all bubbling up under the surface. So, anyway, shortly after my book came out, about 2 months after that, there was a crisis point in my family. My parents had another conflict or something erupt between them. My mom steeled herself and prepared to leave, crashed out with her chronic pain and all the layers that come with that. And I didn't know at the time that she had overdosed to attempt suicide. So I had gone down to check on her, feeling as though like she's between worlds. Is she with us? Is she with me? I'm on my way, mom, praying in the car to get down to the house and tended to her that day. She was stable, but I found out then the next morning that that's what had happened, that she tried to take her life. So I drove back down, got her to agree voluntarily to be evaluated and admitted for her like 3-day inpatient stay for her own safety. And then she decided when she was discharged to separate from my dad. So it was a very kind of harrowing experience in a lot of ways. It's been an interesting journey to tease apart what her stories are and what my experience and my stories are that
Yeah.
kind of revealed within that.
I want to jump in there because I don't know about you, and I'd be interested to have our listeners reflect on this too, but when my mom was alive, there was a cellular, visceral connection in every one of my cells with her. Like, whether I was loving her one day or hating her one day, I could feel I was made from her. And I can only imagine to see your mom, if you're her biological child or adopted child, whatever, our mothers, somehow there's this connection. Do you mind if I ask how that was for you, knowing that she didn't want to be here anymore?
In the moment, I was focused on, vitals and stability, and really there was like a fierceness that rose up in me, both in tending to her and in communicating with my dad. This is serious. This is serious. And I want you paying attention to X, Y, and Z. If anything here changes, I want you to call 911. And again, it wasn't until after the fact that I found out that that's what was happening. It was a clear and persistent pattern hearing her say, "I'm done. It failed. I'm still here." And so to be the one to get her the support that she needed, I would do it again. I also have had some moments of reckoning, though, within myself that no child needs to take on that role or responsibility. That's why, emergency services exist, for example. So there was something that compelled me to take action in the ways that I did. And then also, more so in the aftermath of it, like realizing I get to have my own experience, my own fear, my own grief with all that's been stirred up as a result. And so there were the conscious layers of what happened, as well as sort of these dreams and bodily revelations that occurred afterwards. One of which was, oh gosh, like when I actually got her admitted and it was like 2 in the morning, I drove over to the hotel. And when I closed the door and turned the deadbolt and finally was like in the hotel room by myself, separate from those 3 days of like tracking what was happening, it was one of the most distinct experiences I've ever had in being a nervous system and polyvagal geek. Right? Like it wasn't a conscious allowing or making something happen, but really just the ability to trust what was happening and to allow and welcome the narrowing of my vision, the slowing down of time itself, the pacing back and forth. The fists on the bed, the sobbing in a heap of, and then finally falling asleep and just being able to let my body do what it needed to do impulsively or instinctually is one of the gifts of my practice, I think, right? That for 20, 30 years, movement has been a gift in my life and has been my career as well, teaching. And so while there was tremendous discomfort and fear, there also was a really deep undercurrent of trust. Like, this is okay. This is normal. I just dealt with something super intense, and my body's gonna let this unfurl as it needs to. And after coming home and having the sun on my arm, like my arm out the window, it was July at that time. So the sun on my skin, the breeze on my face, and this Chris Stapleton song that is just burned into my memory, "The Joy of My Life." Tears were coming then, right? Of like, okay, she's alive, I'm alive, I'm going home to my husband, to my children. And it felt like one of many full circle moments, knowing that the love and security I have in my like young woman life and marriage is wildly different than what was happening in our household when I was growing up. So to see my kids jumping on the trampoline and have those moments of like reunion with my present moment life, as well as tracking those gaps in the narrative or pieces of the puzzle that were kind of falling into place all of a sudden, and realizing, oh, when I was about Fern's age, that's when that happened. Or, oh, that happened when my mom was pregnant with me, or, whatever else. So it's just like puzzle pieces falling into place and the truth kind of coming through. from that place of safety or security, it feels like, right? That there was an intactness or trust, both in myself through practicing for so long, not knowing some of these things, and the felt sense in the moment of like, this is my home, this is my place, and this all gets to be churned and sorted and resolved and brought to completion by the way I choose to live now.
Can I ask
Yeah, go.
if you weren't really aware of some of the gaps that had happened in your childhood, were you consciously setting out to develop or create this new life with love with your spouse and daughters jumping on the trampoline and enjoying the breeze on your face and the sunshine with Chris Stapleton? Like, were you
It's
conscious that you were trying to create something different than you had?
an interesting question, right? I think I go back and forth about that one. There has always been a sense of like instincts in me. Again, now in hindsight, makes more sense in terms of some of the contexts of, things that I've always had a stand for or things that I've avoided, like on movies or shows, not being able to stomach certain types of violence that, yes, it's pretend on the screen, but viscerally, it didn't feel like pretend, right? I wasn't able to stomach that. So there is, I guess, in some ways, a consciousness around wanting depth, wanting belonging, wanting intimacy and sincerity. And perhaps that came in contrast with some of what I experienced earlier on. Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. I think when people are, in my experience, I should say, when we know this abuse happened and then that happened, and it's articulated, it's formulated in your prefrontal cortex, and you might write a list saying, I want to manifest something differently. But for you, maybe because it hadn't been articulated like that, there's feelings and sensations that your body knew, and you did create something different, but it was from an organic place as opposed to cognitive place, if I'm understanding you.
Yeah. There's definitely been visceral or kinesthetic clarity or knowing that has driven choices consciously. I'm actually thankful that some of the pieces of the puzzle are gaps. They're like a black hole. I don't have the articulated memory in my mind, my brain, the narrative, or the events, right? I think some of it was definitely like pre-verbal, early developmental, as well as intergenerational, things that I didn't directly experience, but my parents experienced when they were young. And there's that sort of, yeah, that inheritance of an inkling or a hunch or just that knowing instinctually, like, this is a no and this is a yes. And I'm going to move towards what feels right or good or loving. Yeah.
One of the tragedies of trauma, though, is that that instinctual knowing of moving towards the goodness gets confused. And in fact, some move towards what they know, but it's not the benevolence, the goodness, the kindness. It's actually like, well, I'm familiar with that visceral sensation. I don't know what it is, but that feels normal to me. And we actually go towards that which has harmed us. My name is Amy Wheeler. I'm the host of the Yoga Therapy Hour, but also the creator of a mobile app that's based on the gunas of yoga and Ayurveda. It's the first of a kind, and we'd love for you to try it for free. The app is called the Optimal State, and it tracks the state of your gunas, and then it gives you therapeutic interventions. Now we're starting to add Dharma Talks as well as Yoga Nidra. And we think these are wonderful ways that you can do some self-care and take care of yourself on a regular basis. So come join us, the Optimal State app. We'd love to see you over there too.
Yeah.
Oh, something
Well,
in
not
you.
long. What is that acronym? TLDR, too long, didn't read. I won't go into my divorce from earlier in life, right? But there was a season of that when I was young where my perception of my parents was very different. There was a real righteous anger in me as a teenager and young adult. The person that was my high school sweetheart and first marriage was more aligned or similar to my dad in some ways. And we really weren't ultimately right for each other. And so that was a really different time in my life where some remnants of that are more true, right? Where it was familiar and therefore felt okay or right or safe versus the courage, the emotional availability, the true security that I have now in my relationship is wildly different, and I'm very grateful. And I've seen him rise to the occasion. One of the things I really did not expect through this process was one specific experience after the crisis point that July and being home for a few weeks and tracking major, like, up and out swirls of, like, almost departure in my system.
Disembodiment. Okay.
Yeah, like my hearing and vision would go or start to go and narrow and buzz. It would be this upward kind of like vortex or tornado-y sort of dizziness and disorientation. And at the time, again, I would like put my hands on the wall or chin to chest, like just a tiny bit of containment and like, I'm okay, like this will pass. Figuring out how to both allow it and contain it and know that, like, I'm here, I'm staying in this body. I got a good thing going now. Like, I'm not departing, right? And so, whether that was kind of like spiritual, energetic remnants of my mom's near departure or my own dissociative qualities of what was past and present, kind of trying to resolve themselves. I don't necessarily need to know. Kind of feels like it's all entwined. So, yeah, to have a spouse who was willing to witness me through that and turn towards me when I asked him to turn towards me versus giving me space was his original response, was like, I'll let you be. This is intense. I'll let you have privacy. I was like, no, I need you. I need you here with me. And he was able and willing to do that. So there was one experience during sex where it was, again, one of the most distinct experiences of my life through kind of the full gamut of numbness and freeze into more of a sympathetic activation. That then, with him just having his hand on my knee afterwards, being able to attune to the present again, crying, shaking, et cetera, right? Whatever it is welcome. And that was enough of an answer for me with what played out in that experience that seemed to complete full circle some of the intrusive thoughts and questions and the way my mind changed or opened up with motherhood, right? There were, again, threads that I was tracking for 5, 6 years that at the time seemed really random. But now, again, like putting the whole puzzle together years later, it's like, oh, this intergenerational piece, this personal thread from my own history, the sort of gut instincts and aversions and signaling from my body that just let me know. You're right on track. You're on to this. You've always been on to this. And learning what to do with that in the present, I think, is again the power of our practice, is rather than looking at that experience, the sexuality experience, and saying, okay, like I'm done. Don't touch me. Go away. I can't do this. It's too much. I'm broken. Or trying to figure out, like, what does this mean for me as if it has to mean something. In my present expression, I kind of played with flipping that question. What if it means nothing? Sure, this signal is clear as day. I cannot deny the felt sense of it, the imagery, the clarity that has come through in real time. And yet, if it means nothing, how do I want to live? How do I want to show up now in my marriage, now in the bedroom, or, you know, whatever other contexts? That if I am truly building trust with myself, trust with my family in this family unit here with my girls, and the kind of embodiment and connection and bravery that I want to live with and show them it's possible to live with, even in deep pain and profound grief, right? That how does that bring me towards the people I love?
And we should note during this whole time, you're still caretaking and supporting your mother. You're still processing feelings and emotions around your dad, if I remember. Like, this is an active process for a couple of years.
Yeah. And the first year, I think I was like really committed to not picking sides, like trying to be like the objective witness and really stay in integrity with this desire to turn towards this trust in repair, like the big-heartedness that I try to or choose to live by, And so I was in contact with both my mom and dad really frequently for the first year of their separation. And then there were more and more accusations, manipulation, demands, untruths in terms of how I was treated, specifically more so by my dad, where I said, you know what? I get to set a limit. I get to say no, thank you. I get to say you're wrong. I didn't do that. I get to stand my ground and be honest and direct in those ways. And how I was not met and respected in return is his choice, not mine. And so it's been really difficult, but really stabilizing and healthy for me. To decide, you know what, this is not necessarily me picking sides. It's kind of chosen for me in the lack of mutual regard, respect, care, vulnerability, right? What was not being returned to me just was so evident over and over again.
Can we
So,
stop there? Because that really is so profound that you weren't choosing sides. You weren't saying this person's right and that person's wrong, or I'm more righteous than you, or you're immoral. You were just saying, I need to be treated a particular way. We need to connect. We need to be understood and seen and heard. And I don't really want to be in relationships where that's not happening. Is that accurate?
yeah, and there were a lot of layers of guilt around that at first, like not wanting to accept defeat, not wanting to fail, not wanting to stop trying or turn away from blood family. And yet the pattern again was clear and evident and repeated, where it came time for me to decide, like, am I going to continually perpetuate my own suffering and disappointment? And over-efforting for something that is so lopsided and imbalanced and not mutual. There is not mutual care. And so I needed to let it dissolve. I needed to accept the truth of what I saw happening and also dissolve the contempt, the resentment, the anger, right? Like there was so much of that at first that prompted me to break contact or limit contact. And now it's come to a different place where there is actually more acceptance and peace that if a relationship is a bridge between people and they never cross the bridge, like I'm here on my side, right? On my side of the riverbank saying, I want you in my life. And we're going to have direct communication, we're going to be on speaking terms. There's going to be some baseline care if that's the case. And for now, it's just in dissolution. For now, it's just an absence of connection and relationship. And my practice, like that winter before all of this happened, I mentioned I was doing breath work, like specific types of breath work that were more in sort of the hallucination realm, right? Like really activating types of breath work that I had avoided for most of my career in practice before that.
Like breath work that kind of takes you to a transcendent state or a disembodied state.
Yeah, I would call it transcendent or dreamlike, really vivid imagery. And at that same time, I picked up a card that I had from Sitar, this little card from some vendor's booth with the Mahamrityunjaya mantra on it, with a little image of a candle flame. And so I found that in the packing and sifting through, like getting my office set up in our new house that winter, and started chanting it, and just was really struck by the power of it. It was like specific and meaty enough to capture my attention, like my intellect, to learn the Sanskrit, to chant that repeatedly. And, you know, imagery of snakes shedding their skin combined with the ancestral sort of lineage reconciling that I was doing that winter, it's really kind of eerie but magical to feel like, whoa, those karmic circles maybe have come to light or come to some kind of resolution or visibility in my family. Not saying I prompted it or like, you know, I did that, whatever. Just the power of that mantra, like, was such an anchor for me before the storm came, before the crisis point came.
Can we take a moment? And some listeners may not be that familiar, so I'd just like to tell you what my chanting teacher told me, but then I'd also like to hear your understanding of the mantra. I remember when she taught it to me, she said, "We are like a gourd or a pumpkin on a vine, and we belong on that vine. We are part of something greater than ourselves, but it is us that thinks we're separate. We kind of pluck ourselves from the vine, but we can never really be separate." So I don't know if that is true. That's what she told me. How do you understand it?
Yeah. Well, my initial understanding, like that first winter, was about this kind of rewriting of our stories or samskaras, which again didn't have great context at the time. It was like, I found this card. It's a new mantra. I've not had a mantra practice for a while. I'm in my first home. Like, let's do this, right? Like, let's learn this complicated, cool thing. A bit superficial, you know, if I'm honest. I think when I Googled it this morning, there was some other definition, like the great death-defying something. And so it holds much deeper meaning for me now. And to just recently, my older daughter and I, we went back to California to visit friends. And I got to have the afternoon with a closest girlfriend. We went to the Korean spa and spent 3 hours naked in hot and cold pools and saunas and everything. I loved the experience for what it was, but the alternating of hot and cold and the initial like chatter and catching up that starts to fade then into hour two or three in an experience like that, where all of us started to get a little bit more quiet and reflective. I was sitting in the steam sauna, which I thought I would hate initially. I was like, I'm winter. I'm like, put me naked out on the snowbank before you would get me in Arizona in July, right? I like the cold more than the heat. I'm very pitta. But that particular day, this was just in January, a couple months ago, in the steam sauna, we were all kind of in our own separate space. And I found myself sitting, and that mantra just started sort of reciting itself through me as kind of a silent or whispered experience, while the steam and the sweat was just rolling, 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 rolling. And it felt like such a purification and sense of completion that I am loved and I do belong and I have so much connection and community and love around me. And so while the absence of love and care or relationship with my dad and my brother, it hurts still, right? There's the human side of it hurting still. There is also this sort of larger bird's eye view of completion and trusting that I've really done my best. I showed up repeatedly. And that maybe now, like through allowing it to fully die, that then can prompt something new somewhere in the future, that perhaps there can be a rebirthing and renewal in those relationships
I
in
think
time.
we won't let it die. We have these expectations and we're holding on for any little shred of evidence that it can be okay. And when we finally kind of let go of the rope, and let the winter come and let the freeze happen. It's only through that winter that any potential in the springtime could ever happen anyway. It has to transform. And it may not come back, but to remember, like, oh, well, it doesn't mean we're giving up. We're just being with what is.
Being with what is. Yes. It was interesting to think about your question of like, what does your practice look like? And,
Yeah, tell us.
how has it evolved during this process? And I had started when we got into that new house, I started an online membership where I was teaching, 2 to 3 classes a week for my online students. And so I was moving or practicing really regularly during that time, but it afforded me like some compartmentalization of like, I'm showing up for them, I'm showing up as a facilitator, I'm going to deliver a great sequence or practice. And so I got the physical benefits as well as kind of the stress, mental, emotional benefits of having moved my body. But my like solo sadhana for myself really took a back burner during that crisis and after, for months afterwards. There was more of the immediate, like putting out fires or dealing with those triggers that were showing up in real time, as well as the more energetic, spiritual, chanting, breath work, those types of practices, prayer, so much time in the garden with my hands in the dirt, ripping out fence posts and planting vegetables, and just that physical labor and rhythmic work in the garden. So, from an outside perspective, I wasn't really practicing, formally on the mat during that time. And I think that that was self-protective, right? There was enough of a buffer where I wasn't asking myself to go excavating any more than I already had, because there was so much raw and revealed that I just needed to be intact and stable during that time. And so now, having moved again into our new home in Madison with kind of a different routine with the kids' schedules, I actually let go of teaching online for my online membership altogether. I was trying to revive it and continue it, and could not put my finger on like the scheduling and the logistics and the relaunching of it. And I just at the end of the year said, that's it. This needs to die too for a season of time. I need to let this go and have my workouts, have my asana practice really just be mine for a season of time. And so it's been fun getting back into strength training here and there, doing some weights, doing a little bit more asana, reviving that mantra even as I was preparing for today and revisiting that. And so I can see as I go in more intentionally into my somatic practices or asana practices, I can see remnants still of the crisis or those layers of questions and uncertainty, really specifically through my lung, rib cage, shoulder, which some folks would say is related to grief, right? The lungs. So working through those layers more intentionally now, I can see that there are still some places to re-embody, and I'm ready for it now. I needed that long winter and some detachment and simplification of just, I'm going to heal by living. Healing is living. I'm going to maintain my day to day. I'm going to mother my children well. I'm going to connect with my husband and fiercely commit myself to the present moment, present sensation, and pleasure, and find my way back to myself and him in those ways. And so, as much as I love the formal practice, I really have seen again and again how much it feeds our day-to-day life. And ideally, what we're doing or learning on the mat or what we're studying in the texts or, philosophy, it has to serve us in our living, waking days in our relationships. Yeah, it's not separate.
So,
Never
okay.
been separate for me, but it's all the more affirmed or validated now that this is a way of life.
And I love what you had said previously, that all of those decades of practice kind of formed a foundation for you to draw from during this time of crisis. And I think it's very normal. I see this a lot that when we are actually in crisis or trying to heal from it, going inward and going deeper and excavating, as you say, like your body intuitively knows, like, no, we don't need to excavate right now. And I love that you honored yourself and just said, I don't have to be a yoga person who gets on the yoga mat and does asana, pranayama, meditation, you know, like forcing ourselves into form over function, kind of, right? And then to have it come back around, and really yoga is life now. Whether you decide to do a more official practice, or you're chanting a mantra while you're gardening, or you're doing a couple 6 to 12 breaths before you pick your girls up at school, like, it just is you now.
Yeah, there's definitely been that sense of integration or consolidation. When my book came out, on the heels of that first winter, and then 2 months later, this massive, like, splintering of the entire family of origin, my own identity, my own sexuality, right? Like, all those questions of, like, how did I come to write a book about the pelvis of all things? And, you know,
okay, time out. That is so interesting. So you wrote a book about the pelvis
Yeah.
before any of this was unveiled to you.
Yes.
Wow.
My book entered the world in May of that year. Yeah. And then in July of that same summer is when the crisis point hit with my parents and my mom's hospitalization and their separation. And then those bodily revelations of my own history came to light. And it's been a good 3 years almost since then to feel like I do still care about pelvic health. I say that with some humor, right? Because there were some deep, dark moments of, like, what the F doesn't matter if someone's leaking? Like, what matters is, are they alive and safe and well, right?
Yeah.
Like, when I was faced with such an acute situation, it made some of my work feel trivial, right? And yet the pelvis itself has always been captivating for me, interesting, intriguing, and there's so many layers. It's like the house of our identity, our sexuality, our security and sense of belonging and place. And so I had begun that process of excavating and curiosity, you know, years before even writing the book. More digging in that winter in the liminal space of, I've written it, but it's not in the world yet. And then life exploded. And so along with that, my website was down and broken for that whole first year that my book was published, like, not ideal. And yet again, it needed to happen. There was a major underworld or death and completion cycle, archetypally speaking, that I went through becoming an author, not just as an author, as a woman, as a wife, et cetera, right? All of my roles or identities. And so to feel now coming into this spring, having had the acceptance, the peace, the time to consolidate personally, as well as, like, launching back into spring with the third anniversary of this book, it does still matter, right? This desire for me, myself, and every woman that I work with, every person that I work with, to feel securely seated on the throne of their own life, in their body, beloved and clear and instincts intact. Pelvic health is a huge part of that, right? It is our base of support. It is our roots. It is our center. And so that just drives me even more to, you know, now finally be a little more moving and shaken with the work that I'm doing, which leads me into the event that's happening in May.
I just want to acknowledge that before we show the website and the book and the event that's happening in May, I want to acknowledge how much I appreciate the depth of the full circle, and that it feels to me almost like birth of your work is happening now, because you came through the full circle to be able to guide others. You know, I think so many times that digestion of our lives doesn't get completed, and it's really beautiful to see that you fully digested it and now you're ready to offer it with us, to us. for
Yes.
us.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, the physical function, the beautiful anatomy of the pelvic diaphragm, like the intricacy of its design, that all still matters. And I still get really jazzed about, the physical integration and function. And yet I've seen, like, not only in my own experience in the acute crisis, how my own pelvic function was impacted by that stress, as well in my work with others, right? Like, it doesn't really matter. They could have the perfect exercise plan, but if life itself is a mess or a struggle or causing great suffering, like, that whole person approach has to be part of pelvic healing or pelvic embodiment, maybe more so when there's been grief or loss, whether there's been trauma of any kind, especially, of course, sexual trauma, that there is a real deal reclamation of our own presence, our own touch, our own experience in real time. We get to do that reclamation, but it takes time. And it takes care and support and witnessing, like, to be held in that process and know that every part of you is welcome and held with that compassion. So, yeah, it's an exciting time. And it's definitely, it feels like a rebirth in many ways. Yeah.
There's this thing in Indian philosophy about cycles of three. Like, you want to go through three moon cycles, which is three times of 30 days to really work through something. And here it is for you, 3 full years have come. So,
Yeah.
all right. Well, let's look at your website. It is so beautiful. We were
Thank
talking
you.
earlier. For those of you who are watching this on YouTube, you can see the picture, but for those of you who are not, we have Sherry in the forest in the snow. Everything is white. And she's in a bright red, fabulous suit. And it says, "Let this be your invitation home to yourself." So you have these things called the Satisfy Retreat, but you also have something coming up in May. And this is May 2025 for those of you who are listening. So tell us, Sherry, what's coming up in May?
So, hot second shameless plug, Satisfy Retreat is in Minnesota in November. Enrollment is open. Reach out. I've done the Satisfy Retreat one time in Connecticut, which is where that beautiful picture came from. My friend Jules is a photographer, and she took both of those pictures, actually, the rose smelling close up and me in the forest in the snow. So thank you, Jules, for the beautiful photography. Yeah. So Satisfy is your invitation home to you through embodiment and sensual and pelvic health education and practices. So, really coming home to ourselves, pleasure as ours first and always, whether you're partnered or not. It's about ourselves, our relationship here in our own flesh and skin. So, the event in May is not yet on my website, but it will be very soon. The event in May is Pelvic Yoga Book Summit. And so, it is a celebration of rebirth and the third anniversary of my book's release, Pelvic Yoga Therapy for the Whole Woman, a professional guide that was published in May of 22 with Singing Dragon. And so, it is a relaunching of sorts for my book and my work in the world and a collaborative space. So, for 2 days, you'll get to hang out with me and my friends, my colleagues, other guest speakers, and experts in the worlds of yoga, yoga therapy, pelvic health, and healing. And I'm excited. I've got my first few speakers have just confirmed, and I'm actively building out the schedule and the list of who you'll get to hear from for those 2 days. And it'll be both a free or complimentary event for folks who want to join us live. Global reach, come from wherever you are. It's 100% online. And we'll also have tickets available for purchase so that people can really marinate in and digest the 2 days of content over 6 months of access with the recordings and some other goodies and bonuses that you'll get with a purchased ticket. So, Pelvic Yoga Book Summit, that's May 2 and 3 of 2025.
And that will be on your website, which is www.sherry, Sherry Dostal, Dostal, Ryba, Ryba.com. And we'll put that in the show notes. So thank you, Sherry, for being here today. And just, I'm kind of in awe of what has happened during this hour together. Like, it really is touching to me. And I think a lot of women probably have some similar knowing and some similar story to yours, and a crisis that brings something to the surface and then a healing. You know, I think this is the story of most women.
Many.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So
Yeah.
thank you for putting a voice to it and being brave enough to talk about it.
Thank you. Thank you. There gets to be a time of, in my Inhabit program, my 9-month women's program, we use the term sacred withholding, right? Things get to be private when they're raw and fresh or new. Or for however long we decide that it needs to be private, right? Like, not everyone wants to share publicly like this. And yet, I share publicly because there are so many universal threads, as you said, in these stories. Everyone experiences grief and loss. There are many rites of passage that we cross as humans, especially as menstruating women or moving through the motherhood spectrum or through menopause. And those markers of time, those seasons of life get to be supported and witnessed. And it's that thread of connection, connection with ourselves, connection witnessing with others in solidarity that helps us actually make it through and really digest it wisely and come through full circle, feeling whole, feeling and remembering that we're intact and worthy and always have been. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Sherry.
Love spending time with you. Thank you.
My honor. Thank you to Sherry Dostal Ryba for just sharing her story with us today. It was very intense, and we all may need some digestion time, but I feel really happy that we were able to bring this to all of you. And I went after the interview and I said, what does the Mahamrityunjaya mantra have to do with a gourd on a vine? Because I remember so many years ago having my teacher tell me about that. And the translation is of a particular line is just as a ripe gourd effortlessly is released from the vine, may I be released from the bondage of death into immortality. The gourd is a metaphor. In ancient Indian culture, gourds like cucumbers, melons, were a familiar image in farm life. When a fruit is fully ripened, it naturally detaches from the vine without force. This effortlessness symbolizes the way to leave the physical body, not in fear, not in pain or clinging, but in complete readiness and grace. And I think as we look at the story that Sherry told today, as well as many of you know, it doesn't have to be death from the physical body. It can be the ending of just about anything in our life that we allow it to be, we accept it, we have that effortless grace. There's a book I've been reading recently called Necessary Endings. I'm telling you, this is a great book. Necessary Endings. Super, super helpful for those of you who are contemplating endings and what that means to you. So I can highly recommend that book. I hope you have a great week and we will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. Thank you to our guests today. And if you've ever thought about being on the podcast, we would love for you to come and tell your story. This podcast is not just for the famous people or the people who've written a book. This podcast is for everyday people like me and you to tell our stories of health and healing and beyond as yoga, yoga therapy, and Ayurveda has helped us. So please feel free to contact me if you have a story you'd like to tell on the podcast about your journey. There would be nothing more pleasant and pleasurable than getting to interview you and have you on the podcast. Don't be shy. You can do it. We're waiting for you to call. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.